Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Movement has the biggest deals of the holiday season and the sleekest watches around. Whether you're gifting for family, friends, or yourself, shop 30 to 60% off Movement's variety of designs, colorways, and functionalities. From the thinnest automatic dress watch under $500 to waterproof guarantee adventure-ready sport watches to rare ceramics. Be the good gifter this year. Shop 30 to 60% off now at movement.com and enjoy fast and free shipping. That's MVMT.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Buffalo Happy Hour. Mike, what's up?
Derek, we got so much going on, but we're back at Resurgence, which is super exciting. And we'll start with introductions for those that are new and haven't seen you before on our channel, which would be shocking. But we'll start with titles, I guess, and then name for sure. And then we'll dive into all things Resurgence.
Sure. Jeff Ware, president of Resurgence Brewing Company, or doer of the things that need to be done, you know. and that's who I am. And I'm happy to be here.
That's awesome. So welcome back on our show. We recently linked up with you guys up in, it's Barker, right?
Correct.
There's two R's, not Baker. Yeah. So in Barker, New York, which was exciting because you guys just started to focus on the cidery. So outside of that, I think we should start there. From our last time we've met, what else is happening with Resurgence going into 2025 is kind of the antithesis of this interview, because there's been a lot of things in the works.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to say it. Like, we got a lot going on and a lot of things that we've been working on for a really long time that are finally coming to fruition, and they've been frustratingly long projects. So we're happy to see them kind of, you know, you can see the light at the end of the tunnel, I guess is the best way to put it. So we got our Florida project. We're opening a brewery restaurant along with the rock climbing gym next to us down in Fort Myers, Florida. We've been working on that for quite some time. And through a lot of weather delays and a lot of other things we can talk about down in the Florida market, it's coming to fruition finally. And we're moving forward with a new small beer garden and R&D facility over on Transit Road up towards County Line, up in kind of like the Grover's area, if you know that kind of Clarence, East Amherst area, which we're excited about because it's a different market for us. I mean, while we get people down here at the brewery from those markets, you know, if you're living in Clarence and you got kids, you're not coming down here on like a Thursday night to have a couple of beers. It's just too far away. So it'll be nice to have an offering up that way to give the Resurgence experience that we want to give, you know, a little bit further from the Buffalo city proper.
Sure. The funny thing, we've interviewed a lot of breweries, but rarely do we interview like somebody of your caliber. I mean, you've been a staple in Buffalo for quite some time.
Is it the hot body that you're talking about?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But like, when you started this brewery, did you envision to open up a place in Florida? Like, what was the game plan when you first started? Because we've talked to home brewers and they don't have that aspiration yet.
No, I think when we opened the brewery, I mean, it was going to be a business, you know. It wasn't like this was born out of a hobby. It was a hobby, but you know, I quit my job and I was starting this, and it was going to be a, you know, full bore ahead, can't fail mentality. But I really thought we were going to be distribution brewers. You know, I thought we were going to make beer. It was going to go out to bars, restaurants, grocery stores, and we'd expand our footprint. Because if you look back, and granted, like, we had our 10-year anniversary this year, which sometimes it feels like it's been, you know, 2 years, but other times it feels like it's been 65 years. And the market's just changed so exponentially. And so you look at, I mean, if you can try to paint a picture of what the market looked like 10 years ago, there were no breweries. Mm-hmm. You know, Flying Bison was around, but they were up on Ohio or on Ontario Street in Black Rock, right? Yep. You'd go there, you'd get a growler fill, but you couldn't hang out there. I think CBW had just opened, but I think, again, it was growler only. Like, there weren't tap rooms on every corner like there are now. And that has drastically changed. And now I think the perception or the reality of the market now is people want a full restaurant dining experience. They want to be immersed in the experience. Like, our original tagline was experience great beer. And, like, now everybody's really taken to that. And because it's a really cool experience, right? Yeah. And I think a lot of people, not just us, other brewers out there have done a really good job with it. But we're definitely restaurateurs now as well. And I didn't see that happening.
I mean, I honestly am curious, because when you guys were over on Niagara Street, the OG location, it was almost like a mecca for professional networking events, where like Weedy would come in for like fundraising events. And then you would have all of these different, I don't know, like corporate-esque individuals within Buffalo we're just going to go to Resurgence. Like, it was this normal thing. But I don't even know how that started in the first place. Like, I guess you just said, sure, like, come in, and then it just kind of spread around the corporate world that, you can do this at Resurgence, and then it just never stopped. And then you moved to Chicago Street, and it's still happening. Like, I mean, it's happening downstairs right now, and that it made me think of it. Like, if you went from, okay, I want to go full tilt as a business, we'll do distribution, we'll get our beer everywhere, we'll try to get into Wegmans, because that's going to change our entire portfolio.
Right.
And then all of a sudden this corporate element showed up in your business plan, really. Like, what was that journey?
Yeah, we really wanted it to be a destination where you could be part of the experience. And I think that at the time, it was very unique to the Buffalo market, where you could actually be amongst the takes. You could see, smell, feel the beer, right? It was right there. And so if we were making beer, it smelled like beer. If we were dry hopping, it smelled of hops. If you wanted to talk to the brewers, you just like threw a peanut at them and they turn around and go, what do you want? You know, so I think that resonated with a lot of people. And at the time we were a fledgling brewery, and we were just like anything to do to make revenue. So people came in and said, can we do this? We're like, yes. You know, so it was, everything was yes. It still is yes. Like, there's no party we cannot figure out how to do here. It's just a matter of how creative can we get. And that's the thing, you know, we talk about with our teams all the time is, because we are at the end of the day a community center, right? So like when we opened the brewery, we wanted to be a place where people can gather. It's like, it's still in our business plan of like, you know, communal space, family friendly. You know, the things that were inspiring us at the time were in Brooklyn, New York, or Denver, Colorado. And there were like daytime drinking experiences where you go have a good time, but it's not a shot in, it's not a shot in a beer kind of place where you stay open to 4:30 in the morning. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with those places. I will frequent those with you if you guys would like. we wanted a different experience. And I think that really resonated with that young professional and for that happy hour type of vibe that was something different, unique, fresh. And so I think that stayed true, and we've kept those customers through providing a good experience. To you know, credit to my team for everything they do.
Is there a time that you can remember where that did shift for you, or and like when you started really hiring a lot of white staff, and like now you have a whole department handling just graphic design and stuff like that? Like, when did you become just more than a brewery and actually a large business now?
I still think we're a large business. I mean, we're still relatively small in comparison to. So I still think it's a really small team, and I guess we're bigger than we were, and we will be bigger than we are in a few years as we start adding on these new locations. But it happened really relatively quickly. I mean, so, you know, there was that first year, which was just chaos. Like, you had arms and legs and knew me. You were helping me. And it was like, you know, you talk about that community. But I did. We needed a ton of help. We had no idea what we were doing in a lot of realms. And then I'd say once we started to formulate the plans for Chicago Street, like, we kept coming, looking at this building. And it was a mess. I mean, that store where the rock climbing gym is now was top two stories were pancaked. It was, the whole back of the building was missing. This was, had huge holes in the ceiling, and then we're gonna build a brewery around it. So it was a huge project. And we knew that huge effort was gonna take a lot more people and a lot more effort to grow the brand. And it was pretty evident that we wanted to do that. But that we couldn't do it ourselves. And so we needed to hire more people to help with that, and people that honestly just know better. Like, you know, I'm just a meatball that wants to make beer and show everybody a good time. And so I think we need people that were, you know, smarter meeples.
Yeah. And, that's a good way to put it.
That's amazing.
And we've been able to, fortunate to have some really good people walk through our doors, and hopefully we help them grow their careers too. And it's worked really well. But yeah, it's definitely a different beast than it was back in the day.
Sure.
It's just really cool to watch. I mean, you say it's small, but look at that. Your system is gigantic. It's got to be the biggest in Buffalo.
No, it's. I think it's.
Whose is bigger?
I mean, well, you know, it's a good size. You know,
that's fair. Yeah. Give credit where credit's due.
It's nothing to shy away from.
I just feel like comparison is a thief of joy, right? So if you were to compare yourself to Budweiser, then obviously, yeah. I mean, they have a massive plant in Baldwinsville that's just gigantic. Yeah. But this is a huge system and a very large operation.
It's a good way to put it. I think it looks at your competitive set and who's your competitive set. Like we always said, we don't want to make the most beer. We want to make really good beer that people really like, you know, and it's that. But even subsetting yourself now into where do you want to be in the market? Do you want to be, you know, the really premium where people are trying to chase you? Do you want to be the everyday, easy, cheap beer? Do you want to be somewhere in between? Like, and we found, like we've always said, we stuck to, like, we want to make really good beer that was approachable and affordable for Buffalonians. Yeah. And that's kind of where we stuck to. Mm-hmm. And if that makes us a billion barrels, it's great. If it makes us less than that, it's great. But I think we found a nice little niche of where we live. And so we're just going to try to live right in that niche. And that's why we brought Blackbird, because it was an exceptional product at an affordable price.
Yeah.
And so it was a no-brainer fit for us.
When you, because you said that you initially thought that you were going to be more of a distro brewery.
For sure.
When did you start distributing, and what was the relationship to get yourself in Wegmans like? Because that's a massive sale. So what was that like?
Yeah, at the time, so we opened... it was gangbusters at the brewery, and we were self-distributing out of my car. So it was me and another guy named Alex, still good friends with him. And literally he had a Jetta and I had a 15-year-old Pathfinder, and we'd shove you know how many you can fit in a Jetta? That's actually outrageous. Or kegs, and we'd deliver, sell, pick up old kegs, and we did that until we got, I think it was around like 78 to 80 accounts. And we just couldn't do it anymore, and we really wanted to get into the off-premise Wegmans, Tops, Consumers, and we needed a package, and so we bought a small canning line. At that point, it was pretty evident we needed to go to a distributor, and so we did some, you know, vetting and trying to figure out who was just different. You know, like now all the breweries go to the wholesalers. Then the wholesalers came to us and said, you know, like, can we distribute your product? We'd love to have your stuff. And now there's just so many breweries. It's, you know, they're like, everybody, we're good, thanks. But we ended up with Tri-It distributing, and we really still to that day thought, like, we're gonna have this awesome location here. This is gonna be home base. You can come see it, touch it, feel it, like I said earlier. But we'll start spreading our reach out. And Wegmans was kind of an anomaly. I didn't know how to sell the Wegmans. So, you know, I really needed help from our wholesalers. Our wholesale partners did help us with that. But then it became a demand thing. Like, we just couldn't make enough. So, you know, we capped out. Within 15 months, we were at max capacity over there, and we added as many tanks as we'd fit in that small space. And so we could only really put one, maybe two SKUs out max to Wegmans. And it really just went to Wegmans consumers at the time, because we couldn't make enough to go to anybody else. Yeah. And it was pretty evident we needed a bigger boat.
That's really interesting, because we obviously come from the whiskey world, and to get yourself into a liquor store, you go in with a bottle, you pour it for the guy, and you're like, do you like it? Do you want to sell it? But you can't just go to Danny Wegmans and be like, crack open a beer, let's hang out for a little bit.
Yeah.
So do you have to do that, though, with Tri-It? Like, how do they know that they actually want your beer? Is it like that, where you're selling how it tastes to them?
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I did. I went and sat with the wholesalers with my little, you know, bag, just like I was selling door-to-door back in the day when I was working for other breweries, and how we started a resurgence. Like, it was door-to-door, and that's still how it's done in the on-premise, right? Okay. So it's still knock on Mr. Bar Owner's door. You go, hi, I'm Jeff. I got a bunch of samples. You know, let's pull them out. I'm proud of these beers. What do you think? And they go, oh, that's delicious. I'll take a keg. Awesome. Great. So we still do that. But for the off-premise, it's a completely different beast. It's all numbers driven, you know, and we had no numbers, right? And we're just kind of like some guys are, you know, smiling out the window. Danny, it's me.
I got your five kegs.
Yeah,
I have nothing else, but I got
Jesus
my five
Christ,
kegs.
Who knows this guy? Get him out of here.
What was your first one that you sold? Was it Greenheart and Sitmo?
It was Resurgence IPA. That was our big one.
Oh, okay.
So that was, so you talk about the market changing. We did, Resurgence IPA was our first IPA, and really it was one of the biggest reasons we opened the brewery, because there were no IPAs in the Buffalo market, mm-hmm. really at the time. And I would argue probably us, CBW, Big Ditch, like we probably all had the same kind of idea of like there's no real definitive Buffalo IPA company, right? And so we thought we'd all, you know, work that angle. But Buffalo, it was a West Coast style IPA, 7%, and it was a killer for us for a long time. But as we started to evolve into what we are now, was really with when Sitmo hit. Like Sitmo was the test batch name for Sitmo. So it was Citra Hop and Mosaic Hop. So we put it on the board as Sit-Mo IPA R&D. And it exploded out the gate. And so like that's why it's named Sitmo. It was supposed to have a name.
That's
it just
so cool.
People came in and were like, I want Sitmo. And so we couldn't change it because it just kind of naturally happened. We were getting more known and we were seeing more growth with our New England style IPAs to the point where Resurgence IPA was now the only West Coast style IPA we were making. And so we ended up discoing that and moving over to Greenheart, which was, we launched Greenheart 2 months before COVID. So that's been a challenge.
Really?
Yeah. So we didn't make that.
I noticed that recently.
Yeah. So it was back to answer your question in a very long-winded way. It was Resurgence IPA was our went out to the market first, and then the other big one at the time was Blood Orange Saison, which you can't sell Saison anymore. Like you just can't. Like nobody wants it. So,
oh really?
It's one of those styles. Like Belgians in general are not sexy right now, and I don't know why because they're amazing. Like I think everything's cyclical. You know, I'm sure you guys see it in whiskey. Yeah. Beer's the same way, and Belgians will come back. And I think everybody that actually makes beer can't wait for Belgians to come back because we all love Belgian beer. But it's just like a not hot thing at the moment.
Is it still IPAs that are kind of ruling the market, or like what is it now?
Yeah, every year everybody talks about what's going to be new and you know what's really dominating the market, and it's like this is all coming, blah blah blah. And the answer is always IPA, and it's hazy IPAs. It really is. And like you know, I was just talking to some guys the other day about like you know we really think West Coast style IPAs are coming back, and they're not. they are. Like you're seeing some traction, but the hazy beast is so big still.
Sure. Yeah,
that it's still a massive part of the market. And I think you are seeing trends back towards lower ABV. That you're seeing trends towards lighter styles, more traditional styles. But they're just trends. And like, even if they get some traction, they're just never going to be the beast that is New England style IPAs right now. So I don't see that changing for the next 2-3 years minimum, if not longer.
Sure.
Man, that's crazy. And then, so we've kind of alluded to the market a little bit. Kind of where it was when you were on Niagara Street, you came here, what the trends currently are, but how is that going to impact the different locations? Because the cidery is going to stay the same.
Right.
And then the North Towns is probably going to be a totally different beast too. Like, I don't know if everyone up there is, not to sound like a typical South Towner, but like, I just feel like they're going to stick more to like the fruity stuff, the lighter ABV, in and out, like quick happy hour type deal, and then shoot home. I don't think people are going to sit there and just slam a bunch of hazies. So, but who knows? I mean, they might. I just don't think that that's a thing. But are you going into it with that mindset of like, let's see how this does?
Yeah, I think you have to, because you just don't know until you get into it. And I think you got to dive in and just figure it out as you go, as far as what your consumers are going to want. I will say, like up there, so our plan for, well, we'll tackle them independently. So there's the brewery here, there's Transit Road, there's Florida, and then there's Blackbird. And the brewery here, we want to be able to make our flagships out of and just keep the ship chugging along. We're also making all the Blackbird cider here. So we just came out with our 2025 calendar of what we're going to be bringing to the market. So we'll be making all those beers, and then we'll be feeding the other locations with some of our core beers out of here. And then also making all the Blackbird stuff here, as well as really adding on to that portfolio. So there were some gaps that, like, we tried a bunch of different ciders last year there, and so we kind of feel like we felt out the market for what works and doesn't work within the super niche in the cider market of where we're trying to go, which would be the best way to put it would be like culinary, you know, like, so we're a little bit drier than a lot of the other ciders that are on the market. We are not as fruit forward or as adjunct forward. So we think like we're a cider drinker's cider. So we want to really be apple forward with a little bit of a nuance. Like a great, great way to describe it is our Ghost Lantern that, you know, has ghost pepper in it. But I don't know if you guys have had it or not, but so you drink it, it's great, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, oh man, what's this going to be? And you're like, oh, it's apple cider and it's wonderful, but you got this little bit of pepper on the back. So it's really like a new, it's a nuanced flavors with the apple cider core. And so that's Blackbird. So we're going to add a couple new things we think are really going to fit into that category. We're also going to be coming out with a an RTD canned cocktail, vodka-based, under the Blackbird
cider huge.
Line in 2025, which we haven't announced yet. So that'll be coming, more to come on that. And then the Clarence location is going to be our R&D facility. So when we left Niagara Street, and we still miss Niagara Street every day. I drive by it all the time. I'm like, oh, I miss you. And we didn't want to leave. It was a really nice spot, and we put a lot of, I mean, like that was like blood, sweat, tears that went into getting that place up and going. But it just didn't work out as time went on. And Clarence is going to be, we have a hole in R&D. So we're R&Ding here as best as we can, right? But we've got a 30 barrel system here. We don't really have a good way to make small batch testing for cider and for beer. So we've jerry-rigged a bunch of stuff together, as brewers will, and we figure it out because kind of like, you know, figure the F out is kind of one of our core values, and we make it work, but we don't have a great process. So over there, it's going to be like a 3 or 5 barrel system. We're going to toy around with a lot of different things that are going on a draft, but you might only get like 4 or 5 kegs on draft of it, and then it'll be like good or bad, and if it sucks, we'll just dump it down the drain, and so it's going to be really R&D over there. Which we really need, because then we can scale it up over here, and then, you know, come out with the new best beers that that we might come out with something new. So we're really excited about that part of it, but it'll also be a unique experience over there. So you're going to get to try a lot of new stuff when you're over there.
Yeah.
So it's not just going to be a hazy farm where it's just all IPA. Like, we'll have all sorts of weird stuff on over there to see kind of like where our niche fits.
Sure.
But we want it to be a different experience. So I think we're gonna, like, it's going to be like R&D. Kind of a resurgence test where you can test batch and try new things that we're experimenting with. But we have learned we need to clean them up a little bit and get far enough along, or else people will let you know they do not think they are up to par.
Have you ever thought about not, like, when you were planning on going to the North Downs, did you ever think of just, like, buying a building around here for your research purposes, or was it always the plan to open up a new location for a new tap room and stuff up north?
I think once we saw where the market was going and the opportunity for direct-to-consumer sales, distribution is really hard right now, and there's very low margins in it. So you got to sell a metric shit ton of beer to make any money in distro. And so direct-to-consumer, especially in our home market, is an easier way to go. And so if we're going to put a little test batch there, why not put it somewhere where we can actually put a bar and restaurant and all that kind of stuff as well, and we thought that was a good place for it, versus having, you know, two locations in downtown that are not wildly different experiences. Sure. So that's kind of where how that ended up.
There's also really nothing up there. There's New York Beer Project, and I don't really know who else. I mean, there's Brazen and Lancaster, but that's Lancaster.
Yeah, and Brightsmith and Brightsmith Brewing is,
yeah, they're Main Street Williamsville. Like, there's really no breweries up there.
Yeah, we've been looking for a long time. Like, it's not easy to find the right properties. And there's certain markets around Buffalo where we've been looking for years and just haven't found the right thing. And so when we were looking up there, to be quite honest, there's good breweries out there, right? So you got Brightsmith does a really great job. New York Beer Project is a beast up there. Mm-hmm. The guys over, Drew and the guys over at Brazen, you know, which are kind of far away the other way. So we did look at all of that because we don't want to, like, you know, jump on somebody's parade. But we also want to make money. Like, we're not going to make money if we open up next to somebody else. And so we found that area. If you actually look at it, Big Ditch and Iskola, we're going to open down right by the thruway there. Remember that project? And then you got New York Beer Project way down here towards Lockport. And so right where we were looking is like split between them. And it's almost 6 miles each way. And 6 miles on transit is like driving to Rochester.
Yeah, that's like an hour.
Seriously. Yeah. At 4:30, you might as well.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, get a full tank of gas because you're sitting.
Yeah. And so that's kind of where we targeted. And we had a lot of people in that area saying the same thing, that we don't have a ton of stuff out right in our neck of the woods. So we were lucky enough to find a property over there, and that's kind of how it all came together. But it wasn't the only place we were looking. We were looking at some other markets, they just didn't pan out because it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
And then Florida. Yeah, I mean, that's just like, it wasn't even like, that's not even close, dude.
No, well, I mean, you guys have been here January through March. There's your answer.
That's fair.
No, we've been going down there for years. My family, to visit my parents, have a place down there. And we've always enjoyed it and always thought there was There is a nice craft market there now, but it was lacking for a long time. They were definitely way behind us, and I think they're catching up in a lot of realms. But we still thought there was something, an opportunity for us to do what we do in that market, in the Fort Myers, Southwest Florida market. And so again, we were looking there for like the right opportunity at the right time, and then finally something came along. We're like, you know, this makes a ton of sense for us. But we're also excited about the idea of, you know, we talked about how hard distribution is. I think this can be a nice foot in the door for us down there. We should have some friendlies and some brand ambassadors that are really familiar with our brand, because a lot of people that live down there are Buffalonians. Yeah. And so they should be familiar. We think they'll be able to talk about our brand and get excited about our brand with us, and then share it with their friends. And so I think that's gonna be a nice move. So that's like why we're doing it, is it wasn't just like throw a dart at the map and go, oh, it's sunny down there. Although that doesn't help or hurt. So we think it'll be, and it's also, it's busy down there when it's slow here. Sure. So their busy season's winter, our busy season's summertime. And it'll certainly give us a nice reason to go, you know, get some sun that time of the year. Yeah. So.
Is it difficult though for you to be like an owner and not have that quick, I got to go drive to the North Towns to check up on it? Like, how personally will you be able to be like, this is in Florida, I can't just get on a plane and go there, I just got to trust the guys that are there? Like, that has to be so difficult.
Yeah, it's still hard to this day. And I'm actually, it's funny, I'm seeing my team members and my peers that are now, that we've brought on to work with us, struggling with the exact same thing. Mm. But the only way we can grow, and now we're starting to get more like entrepreneurship and the things I've learned, is you can't do everything. Like, you gotta put the systems in place and put the people in place and work those systems and those processes. And so I'm confident that our team and myself can put the process in place to make sure you're getting the Jeff Ware experience when you're down there. Because if it's not, I'm gonna raise hell. I mean, it's gotta be the research experience, and we talk about experience a lot. And I mean, we spend hours and hours and hours talking about experience, and we still screw it up all the time. Like, it's a really hard thing to do, but I can't live there. I got three little kids at home, and like, you know, I got, you know, obviously I'm at the gym all the time and doing all those kind of things. And, you know, I mean, you guys get it, right? I mean,
yeah, of course. Character.
I see you guys there all the time.
Yeah. Nobody else has to know, man.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
So it's a challenge, but it's certainly a challenge we're excited for. And I think we have the right people, and we're building our team right now so that they're ready to rock and roll and get down there and get things going. But it's going to be a lift. I mean, I'm going to be down there probably for 3 months, yeah. I would imagine, as we get going, maybe longer.
For sure. But that was my next question. That was probably an easy pitch, right? Like, hey, who wants to go open Resurgence in Florida?
Oh, yeah.
There wasn't a lack of hands in the air, I assume.
No, we actually, some of our brew staff, like, they're like in line. Like, they want to, you know, who wants to go down there and move down there? Same thing with some of our front of house people. And so I think it'll be an easy sell to get some people down there, or even spend, you know, time down at both, and I think that's kind of our idea. Like, we don't really have one master, you know, giant head guy that's doing all the beer recipes. It's really a team approach.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.
The changing of seasons can affect how you feel. 1 in 5 people experience some form of depression, no matter the time of year.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. Visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
And I think that we can rotate through a little bit and then bring some new people in, if some fresh ideas, because I'm sure just every time about Clarence is going to be different. You know, the beer mix in Florida is going to be wildly different. Yeah. So we want those fresh ideas, and we want those coming in and start to, like, you know, figure out what the next cool thing is going to be.
So how is that going to be impacted? Like, are the hops going to be different? The temperature is obviously probably going to play some factor, right? But is that just normal brewery stuff where it's like, all right, we're accounting for that. It's just a formula check, or is it way more involved?
It's a bit more involved, especially on the brewing side. I think water chemistry is going to be one of the big things down there that we're going to have to master. But it's much more doable than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago. So I'm confident we can figure that out. I'm not even worried about it, to be honest. I think Drew and Nick and Josh and the guys are going to tackle that, no problem. We're just going to have to be a little more proactive about it and, like, get in front of it. We'll probably have to make a couple test batches and dump it down the drain to make sure we're flavor profiled exactly where we want to be, which is one of the things we've learned over the years, is that, like, you don't want to, like, be R&Ding on the spot with your customers. Like, you know, even, like, our R&D stuff, because you've probably been to them, but we used to do, like, kegs and eggs experimental beers.
Yeah.
And so the whole concept of that was that you're going to try stuff out of the tanks that are experiments with us. And, you know, they're experiments. So some might taste great and be like, whoa, we got a home run potential here. Or some might be infected, or some might be, just bad. You know, like, it was just bad. We thought it was going to be great and it's horrible. but you're going to be there with us. And we found the feedback from that was, your beer sucks, you know? And I was like, well, you're not understanding. So you're missing the exercise. The idea was, yes, we know, like, not all these are going to be winners. And so, you know, they pull out, like, their favorite, like, Untappd and be like, 0-star, 1-star. And, like, well, yeah, that was a dud. But, like, this is, you know, like, you don't come up with the next great recipe as a chef without making a bunch of recipes and trying things. And there's no different in beer. And, now we've learned that, like, you know, you at least got to get to, like, Gen 2 or 3 in the R&D process before you put it in front of your customers, because they're just going to shit all over you.
No. Yeah, this place really bites.
Dude. Do you put a lot of weight into the Untappd ratings?
No. No, we don't. I mean, we're very critical, I think, on ourselves, and we'll happily take criticism from anybody. And we invite people in. We do a ton of blinding. I think in whiskey, beer, wine, anything you do, blinding is the way to go. Get an impartial group of people to come in, do it blind, and the answers speak for themselves, right? And then the rest of it is branding. It's branding and marketing, and how good are you at that? And if you can win consistently blind, I think you're in a really good spot, especially when you don't have subjective people on panel. And we do a ton of that. And so I don't put a lot of credence into Untappd, although we do look at it. I mean, if we're starting to see a trend somewhere, like, it's kind of a red flag going, like, you know, we're either missing the mark on the liquid here, guys, or we're missing the mark on the message here. That will happen occasionally, but more often than not, we kind of, like, you know, just go, that's nice.
Yeah, right.
That's nice.
Are you going to be making cider down there too, or is it just going to be beer?
We're going to start with just beer there. We're going to ship cider down. Okay. So we will sell cider at the tap room, and then we'll see if we go into distribution there or not. I think it's a good story for us too. New York apples, are a thing that Florida doesn't have. You know, they have oranges, and so they can have their oranges. And we did try to ferment a bunch of oranges just to see what we could do with that. And it's like a mimosa, and it's not bad, but not what we're going to do with that yet. So certainly not going to let our customers try it yet until we clean it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You did what?
What is the market down there for cideries and things? Or is it just pretty status quo with, we like beer, we like, you know, clear spirits, I guess, because they're like fitness freaks and they're always on a beach, so they care. So.
Yeah, I think the appetite's there for everything because you have so many transplants. And so I think Florida's kind of like Buffalo. It's a big chain market. And so you have all of the national players are there. All of your Southwest regional players are there. And then you have a lot of local players. But the local players are really small comparative to Buffalo and or really New York State in general. So you get a lot of guys that are making 1,500, 800 barrels a year. And there are a lot of them making really good liquid. They're just really small, local, corner kind of spots. I think it'll be interesting for us to see as we introduce ourselves. Like, I guess the best way to say with cider is like, we're not going to go full bore. Like, we're Blackbird Cider. Here we are. You know, listen to us roar. It's going to be like, it'll be available to tap room. We're going to kind of get it out there a little bit. And then we'll put a game plan for that kind of as a secondary plan down there. But we're certainly not going to Florida just to release Blackbird. Yeah. We still have so much work to do here in the local markets to get us where we want to be that I think we'll work on that after we get established.
So you say like the Blackbird acquisition, did you see that as a hole in your portfolio where you needed to provide something other than beer? Like, what made you actually acquire Blackbird? It's fascinating because it's such a recognizable brand in Buffalo.
I think that's what made us really end up purchasing Blackbird is that, you know, we looked at it. I talked to Scott and we kind of balked at it. And then it kind of came up again. And again, we tried all of the ciders. And I'm not going to like preach that I'm a cider expert here. It took me a long time to learn beer and I'm still not a beer expert. And and so we certainly are learning cider. And as we were going through that education on cider, we just did so many blinds with it. And every time we blinded it, it won. It wasn't even close. Sometimes we'll put a set of Greenheart and, you know, Other Half and Big Ditch, whatever. And like, we'll be, you know, it varies from time to time, but we're usually towards the top. But, you know, sometimes somebody else wins, whatever. Blackbird won every time. And it was always everybody's favorite, no matter what style we were doing. And so that was a really promising sign because the liquid was really respected from a cider drinker, right?
Sure.
That was encouraging. And we loved it was all New York State apples. We loved it's a local place. It's got really great brand recognition in the Buffalo market that falls off a cliff once you get out of Buffalo. So we thought there was runway there to grow the brand. But it does have such a nice, it resonates so nicely in the Buffalo market that we thought there was going to be an easy lift to kind of bring that into our portfolio instead of having to like build a whole new brand.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So it was more of an opportunity that came about. You weren't necessarily searching for a cidery to acquire.
No, but we were searching to, you know, go beyond beer.
Got
so we're like, what does that look like? And this was just fit that opportunity, you know, of what we're looking to do very well. And it's gone really well so far. I think we're going to end up this year in the Buffalo market probably plus 20% on cider in a market that's not really up at all. And so I think there's a lot of good that can still come from that brand. And, you know, kudos to Scott and his team for growing a truly solid cider business.
Yeah. You said something about making vodka. Are you bringing a still in here? Or like, how are you making vodka now?
So we're going to do it the old-fashioned way, and we're going to buy it.
Oh, okay. Nice.
I mean, they have a really good put-together neighbor.
Yeah.
We are we're sourcing it right now to figure out, you know, a neutral grain spirit. But we have no interest really in getting in the distilling game. So we'll be more of like a rectifiery or a rectifier. And we'll just blend and blend it all down. But, yeah, distilling is not something that there's a lot of good distillers out there. There's one across the street from us, like you said, or next to us. And so that's not a game we want to get into, but we think it's a good brand extension for Blackbird. You know, Blackbird cider is already sold in liquor stores. There's some brand equity there for them. And as we're seeing the market change, we think this is a really easy transition into cocktails for us with that line. One of the reasons we bought the brand.
So you say brand recognition, and when you expand outside of Buffalo, like Resurgence, the labels on the can are very recognizable in the store. But as you go across to Florida, how do you see that changing or staying the same or really recognizing that Buffalo head that you guys really pride yourselves on? Like, is that going to change at all? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, we've debated it, and I think we decided to lean into it. So I think we're going to like as you see, we have a brand refresh coming up. You're going to see more Buffalo head and less of that Resurgence stripe that goes down, you know, the words that go down the side. We're actually going to change that font type a little bit and really be like, this is the logo is our crest. It's our brand recognition. That's our brand. When you see that from across the room, you go, oh, that's Resurgence. And then let me go see what style it is. I think that there's equity in there just because people down there are going to be familiar, like, you know, and not everybody, but, you know, it's like, you know, the 6 degrees of separation with Buffalo. Like, there's like everybody down there knows someone from Buffalo.
Yeah,
and it's every time I go down the street down there with the Buffalo Bills shirt on, you know, it's like somebody down the street's just like, go Bills. I'm like, go Bills. And you know, so I think we're going to have some people that will be familiar with us, and I think we can kind of use that to our advantage as we start to build the brand down there. Yeah. But I really think that it's going to be building a new brand in a market that has players. And so, like, we're going to be the new guy. It's going to be some effort. Like, we're not just going to walk in and, you know, just be like, hey, we're here. It's going to be a lot of work of doing the small things that I think we do really well in that ground game.
Yeah.
To start to build a brand, but more important than anything is you know, good liquid, good experience, and we do those, and I think we'll be all right.
Just really quick on the branding stuff, because Blackbird is very text focused too. Are you going to stay with the bird and kind of make that the focal point, or are you leaving Blackbird alone?
No, we're going to refresh Blackbird in 25 as well, and we don't hate it, to be quite honest. Yeah. Like, it's not a bad label. No. I think it's just it's been probably the same for at least 5 years, if not 10 years. And so I think we want to focus in on that B in the bird.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, that lowercase B with the bird on it, and really enhance the bird and make that kind of a focal point, because it's very recognizable. Mm-hmm. And it's a good story, you know, with the whole Blackbird brand and everything like that. And then keep everything else like really crisp, clean, and like, you know, classy kind of.
Sure.
You know, so you think of like, you know, a white tablecloth restaurant. You know, you could put this cider into a white wine glass if you wanted to, and sip it and enjoy it. And I think that's kind of where we want to push the brand, is an elevated cider experience that's still very approachable.
Mm,
so,
sure.
You know, an affordable luxury. You're not buying a $25 bottle of cider. You're buying a really nice cider at an affordable price, but it might be a buck or two more than your competitive set of something from like a national player.
Sure.
That's so bougie.
We are so bougie. We're fancy boys.
That's it.
Fancy boys.
It's going to be really cool when Florida's up and running, because you're going to be inside of every Bill's Backer bar. And then if somebody is drinking it on a beach, they're going to be like, oh, where are you from? And then they just point at the buffalo head on the beer can. And that's going to be their answer. Like, it's going to be this weird, amazing cult of like buffalo only people know what the goat head or the head is. And everyone's just going to point.
Yeah, I think it's going to be something that translates and resonates.
Yeah.
Relatively easily. Because I do think that exactly what you said is going to happen. And I think that it'll be a conversation point, and I think it'll be relatively warmly welcomed. And then anybody that is not familiar with us, I think we'll learn that we're not awful people. Like, mm-hmm. we'll be very communal. We'll happily help everybody else down there. We want to be part of the community down there. And so, like, we can't wait to dive in. And we've already joined the associations, and we can't, you know, we're involved associations up here. Of course, we'll be involved associations down there, and we'll just look forward to like getting to know everybody and being part of that scene.
It's my turn.
Okay.
What is the infrastructure like down there? Because there was a lot of talk with the head brewer at Pressure Drop,
Carl.
He goes, there's like unlimited amount of water in Buffalo. You never have to worry about water in Buffalo regarding breweries. What is that conversation like in Florida when you're looking at the infrastructure of the city?
Yeah, there's no issues as far as quantity of water. I think the bigger concerns down there is that they keep having giant storms that affect everything. You know, so
yeah.
It affects how, you know, permitting is done. It affects how people go to work. Obviously, their home situations, they keep closing things for weeks at a time, you know, and so that's obviously a big issue that they're working through. Insurance is something else that you could start a whole nother podcast on down there.
That's,
right now.
Yeah, that's going to be a train wreck.
Not great. So, there's a lot of different hurdles that are coming from that. But as far as like, you know, basic utilities, it's slightly different, and we're learning that game, you know, like electric's used a lot more down there than gas. As far as water goes, I'm not concerned about it at all. It's there's plenty of it. It's not, but it's certainly not, I mean, they don't have a great lake, you know,
right.
Mm-hmm. So, but there's enough for what we're going to do down there.
Are you still digesting Florida, or do you already have 5 to 10 year plans of going out west or anything like that?
No, I think we're still digesting Florida, and I don't think that'll be our last expansion. So I think that we are always looking for opportunities, but I don't know exactly what that looks like yet. And we don't want to jump the shark on exactly where and what we're going to do. We've had every opportunity individually. And so if I had to venture any guesses, I would guess they'd be along the East Coast somewhere, maybe in Florida, but we'll see how it goes. I mean, we could be sitting here a year from now and be like, oh, well, That didn't work.
If I can throw out a suggestion, Southtown's Hamburg would be really cool.
Yeah, well, you know,
we're both in Hamburg.
We've looked at Hamburg. We've looked at Orchard Park. We looked at, but there's a lot of breweries there now. And so,
yeah, they just shot up, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, you got Johnson Landing's over in Hamburg now, and obviously Johnny's over in Hamburg Brewing have been there for a while. And if we're going to go somewhere, we want to go somewhere we can fill a need, not try to compete with somebody else as much as possible. I mean, there's a lot. It's very hard to do now.
Yeah, because you got Wayland and First Line on top of it.
Wayland, First Line, and then your beer project just opened up down there too.
Yeah.
And the Ridge. And so, like, you got all these players that were not there previously, and not to mention... Rusty Nichols is over there as well, not too far away. So there's certainly a lot more breweries than there were there a couple years ago, and we'll see how that goes, and if that market there can support that many breweries.
Sure.
New York Beer Project's got a compound, man. That place is massive. I didn't know what the hell it was when they first started building it.
It's like a Bass Pro Shop at first.
It's crazy because I kept passing it every day on the way to work, and I'm like, what the hell is that going to be? And I'm like, I don't understand what this is. Like, what is that? Like a hotel? Like, this is a dumb place for a hotel. And I'm just thinking about it, and I'm driving. Like, cruise control. It's 6 in the morning. I'm like, what is that place? And then you finally started to get sprinkles of information. I'm like, that's insane. Mm-hmm. Absolutely insane. I'm watching them drop the air handlers in on a crane.
Yeah.
I'm going like 72, and I'm just staring out the window. I'm like, I got to focus on what I'm doing. Like, it's fascinating.
Yeah, that's a big nut over there for sure.
Huge.
We'll see. I mean, we'll play it by ear. I also think, we're in a really weird market right now with breweries in general. And so, some of our next strategic plans or growth patterns could be acquisitions, based on, consolidation or where other things are going on. So, like, it's definitely a depressed market. We're trying to find opportunities where we can. But we also got to get some of these places open and start, on track and making money, because it's like there's not a money tree that's grown in my backyard. In fact, it's actually a big pit. The money keeps falling into it with every delay. So we need to climb out of that.
Do you constantly think about that stuff? Because you're in a weird spot where you're too big to be a small player, but you're too small to be like a massive player. So are you always constantly thinking about that next step? Or are you like, what are you thinking about right now?
Yeah. How are you? Are you okay?
Are you good?
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to lose a couple pounds. I've been drinking a lot of beer lately.
That's why we go to the gym though.
Yeah. So if I look frazzled, cause I'm not in my homeostasis, but, it's definitely on the mind of, I think, of everybody. Having talked to a lot of brewers across the state through the Brewers Association, I think that's kind of the gist of the mood, is cautiously optimistic that things will change, but realizing that, like, we got a probably 2 years or so of really tough pills to swallow, as it's a hard market right now. So you got a lot of competition coming in. You have a smaller demographic as far as generation coming into drinking age. They're drinking different things, it's not really like we're losing out to whiskey or vodka, which we are in some instances with beer as a whole.
Yeah.
But you also have like the big disruptor, which is marijuana and gummies. And I think that's the biggest disruptor personally. And then you also have the movement of people drinking less and being a little bit, healthier, which I... Yeah, the face you're making is kind of how I feel about it, too. Like, 20-somethings are going to be 20-somethings, in my opinion, and they're going to pick their poison, but they are going to pick a poison.
Yeah, right.
And I think it's just they're changing their drinking habits a little bit. There's a lot of uncertainty in the air, I think, right now, and people are trying to figure out what that new normal looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like downtown has gotten to a point where it's oversaturated a little bit, or do you feel like there's still room to grow? Because I feel right around COVID, we saw an explosion of new like home brewers or breweries coming into the downtown market. Yeah. Is the population just so large that it can support it, or?
I think the PC answer to that is there's always room for growth, Sure. And I think there is room for growth in the right model.
Yes.
If that makes sense. Yeah. So
of course
I think that if you want to open a brewery right now and you're like, oh, we're just going to go to distribution, I'm like, awesome. You might as well just, just write me a check for $300,000 and I'll save you $500,000, because you're going to lose it all. So I think with the right models, you can do it. But I also think the downtown corridor right now is slumping a little bit I think you're seeing more amenities in the suburbs that you don't necessarily need to come downtown for. So I think I think the workforce has not returned from COVID fully. So you're seeing like weeknights are very, very slow. And that's not just resurgence. I think that's across the board. Everybody I talk to, from bar, restaurant owner, brewery owner, whatever. And then the weekends are still there. I think that downtown definitely like needs a push at some point to kind of get back on track to where it was. I just don't think it's as sexy coming downtown as it was like 3 years ago when like, you know, things were really building. And I think a lot of it's just the macroeconomics of the United States right now. We're like, there's not buildings being built. There's not a lot of excitement new. Like it's just kind of like plugging along, you know?
Well, it was because we talk about this all the time because both of us lived in the first ring of the city. So we lived, he lived in Cheektowaga, I lived in West Seneca. And our generation, which are the children of baby boomers or around that area, a massive part of Buffalo's population, just moved to that second ring of the towns like Hamburg, Orchard Park, Boston, and all that stuff. So that's probably why you're not seeing a lot of people come to downtown, because those have good breweries, like you're saying, and the people are more staying in that second ring.
Right.
But as soon as what the generation comes after us starts getting old enough to rent and buy houses and stuff like that, you'll see that come back, because that's where the more affordable housing is in the downtown Buffalo, in that first ring. So it might be a slump now, but it's got to improve over the next couple of years.
I hope.
Yeah, me too. And I think building will help that. Yeah. So, you know, as rates fall and like the economy comes back a little bit, you'll start to see development happen again, which will be more apartments, which we need more apartments in downtown Buffalo. Yeah. And so as there's more housing, there's more people, which those people need to go do stuff and have fun. Mm-hmm. So,
and just, I mean, just a time of recording too. You know, I mean, it's fall 2024 going into 25. So it's an election year. So you're also seeing that. So a lot of companies, even they're not doing a lot of, oh yeah, let's go out and blow $2,000 tonight because it doesn't matter, so we'll just bring 50 employees to this establishment. They're hoarding cash because they don't know what's going to happen. Yeah. So you still have that, you know, and that's just a weird time.
Yeah, and that's definitely a thing. And
and
so we'll see what things look like, but I think things are slowly trending in the right direction. It's just going to be kind of a, it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to be a slow roll, and we're just gonna have to weather the storm, just like everybody else is. And it's not just a local thing; it's a national thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, if somebody was to go to either a bar or go to Wegmans and they see Resurgence on the shelf, what would be, just for the people that don't necessarily know what Resurgence is, what would be a good beer to try out? Is a good representation of what Resurgence is?
Yeah, Sitmo all day.
Yeah.
So Sitmo is my jam. That's the beer I'm pulling off the shelf if I'm gonna have one beer from Resurgence, it's that classic New England style. It's a little sweeter. It's got, you know, all the things that you want to have in a big New England with that pop of tropical fruit flavors. But I wouldn't sleep on our seasonal program either. We actually are seeing a lot of growth out of our seasonals right now. I mean, our Oktoberfest, I think, has been great for years now. Summer Ale had a banner year. And it's weird, as we were talking about earlier, people kind of going back to more basics. Like Summer Ale, which was always kind of, it's a basic beer, right? It's not gonna, like, your beer geek is not going to be like, oh, man, check out this dope summer ale I just had. Like, you know, it's just a summer refresher. It's got a nice little Mandarin kick to it. It's light, it's easy, it's crisp. But it hits the spot. And I think we're seeing people kind of going back to that. I just want something like it's light, crushable, with a little bit more flavor than, you know, maybe your macros. And now we just launched our holiday ale. So I think like those are all a really nice place to be. We try to make a little bit of something for everybody without being like overwhelming.
Yeah.
And I think that's something we've worked on since COVID, is kind of squeezing that offering in a little bit. Cause you know, if you can't find a beer you like out of 8 beers that we have at the grocery store, like, you know, like try a little harder. Yeah. Like, you don't need to have like 38 different Resurgences to pick from, you know?
Yeah. How does a Loganberry Wood sell?
It's still a huge mover for us, particularly in the summertime.
Okay.
And it's one of those love-hate beers, right? So, you know, like, I'm not a huge sour fan, but we sell a ton of fruited sours. And I think we execute them really, really well. But it's not my style.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the same thing for Loganberry Wit. And, like, a really fun story on Loganberry Wit. I remember we were testing this way back in the day. It was a homebrew that I was making when we were starting. And we took like actual raspberry and blackberry, and we're blending them together and trying to make like a real Loganberry.
Yeah.
And we're blinding, of course, as we do, and trying. And I remember saying, this is great. And so finally somebody comes up to me and goes, listen, that beer is excellent, but that's not fucking Loganberry.
Oh, really?
And I go, oh, okay, sorry. And like, was they, everybody has that Aunt Rosie's,
sure, you know,
Crystal Beach syrup flavor. So we tooled it and literally put Aunt Rosie's, or actually we used Crystal Beach, I think, honestly, in the recipe.
Oh, okay.
And so it actually has that, and then we redid it again. They're like, that's Loganberry right there, you know? And so you can't mess around with that flavor, and people love it. And it's, I think, again, we executed it right to what, like, you want that buffalo Loganberry flavor in a nice, refreshing beer. And so for what it is, I think we did a really good job with it, and people do really gravitate towards it in the summer.
Did you ever release that raspberry blackberry one?
No.
No?
No, it just lives forever in my memory.
It's in the pit behind my house.
Yeah. It's in the pit. Yeah, it's buried down there. A lot of IOUs.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, anything else that you wanted to bring up about what Resurgence is playing? I mean, I know we talked about a lot today, and you guys have a lot on your plate, but anything else that we, like the wedding space, how's that going? Is everything going well with it?
Yeah, banquet's been a really big business for us, and I think something we do really well with. So, if anybody's looking for any kind of venue for any kind of event, from a corporate party to a birthday party to a wedding, we have multiple spaces here that can accommodate you, and I guarantee you'll be happy with the event. The team does really a tremendous job, from the food to the beverage to the service, and making sure soup to nuts, everybody's having a really wonderful experience, and I would put it up there with anything else in the city.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff, thank you so much for your time. The beers are fantastic. I mean, if you don't know who Resurgence is and you're in the Buffalo area, I don't know what you're doing at this point. But seriously, some of the best beers that we've had, and this was a good time.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we got to catch up.
Yeah, it's fun. I appreciate it, guys.
Of course.
Of course, man.
Thank you, everybody. You.
Yep, cheers. Yeah!
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.